Well, why don't we ask some? Hi, everybody.
Hi.
My name is Khan, and I'm a member of Project Safe, and welcome to Harm Reduction with you. So, originally, this is a workshop that we've done before, but generally it's for a larger crowd. So, we were thinking maybe do something that's like a little more alternative and a little less structured. But there are also some exercises. So, I will propose that maybe just like go around the room, introduce ourselves, and then the three Project Safe people, we could talk just for a few more minutes about this, and then if we want to do the exercise, we can do it.
Yeah.
So we're going to do an exercise that involves people like moving around the room a little bit, if everybody's like comfortable and cool with that. All right, so why don't you explain and I'll make the...
Okay.
I'll break the things down.
So this is called the continuum of acceptability. And so what we're going to do is we're going to sort of read out a series of scenarios, and we ask that you individually sort of situate yourself along a continuum based on sort of your first impression of the scenario. And what Khan will be writing out is the continuum starts with good for others, good for me, you know, good for others, not good for me, fine but not preferred practice, okay for some over there, far away, and not okay for anyone ever in the history of ever. So sort of this continuum where it's like accepted and welcomed and then totally not okay. And maybe we can just do like the first two.
Yeah,
the bookends.
Yeah.
And so what we'll do is, you know, if everyone's willing to get up and we'll physically move as we read out different scenarios. Get our bodies moving.
Can you read them all again?
Sure. Yeah, they're right here.
Okay.
So I'll have to just put this down. I'll see a little bit from my outline too. And so we're going to do this exercise, and we ask you, there's a little bit of self-disclosure, obviously, that is sort of going on in this exercise, but I realize that we haven't established group norms, so maybe we should do that before we start.
Yeah.
So we'll do that first, now that we're up on camera. So there's a little bit of self-disclosure, which won't be on the radio, I guess, for moving. And then we'll debrief after and sort of see, you know, what influenced our decisions to move around.
Yeah, and then no one is ever going to have to sort of like defend their individual position on the continuum. We're definitely going to be talking about things that we felt, but no one here is going to have to like justify why they're there. And the reason why you choose one space or another for one situation, but different motivations for another situation, it's totally cool. It's really just sort of like where your first where you're like, that feeling tells you to go.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, eating meat.
I
can't say enough good things about it.
Yeah, it's really, it's whatever, yeah, it's whatever you want, and it's really the first thing that you feel. Okay, smoking cigarettes. Okay, having sex without any latex barriers. Okay, having sex with someone that you just met. Okay, having sex for money.
Oh,
like, it's okay, and again, this is comfort level. It doesn't mean that you're necessarily saying that, again, that it's not necessarily that it's the worst thing, or even that you're not even necessarily going to be talking about just yourself. You can be talking about it in, like, a more theoretical way. It's just really just sort of, like, what is the first reaction that situation kind of makes you feel, right? So, okay, having sex for drugs. Okay, what about having sex for pleasure? I guess everybody's in here. Okay. Okay. Using cocaine. Smoking crack at a party.
So I'm not right on the door, I'm like...
Yeah, exactly.
I'm just like, not... Yeah.
That's, yeah.
Well, it's even really cozy for you.
Yeah, it's
very frustrating.
Yeah, exactly. It's really just to sort of, yeah, just kind of like remember, like, even like maybe even like physical sensations, like when the situation changes, or like what is the first thing in your head when you feel like you have to change your spot on the continuum, right? So just like kind of like be aware of like those cues, like those things that you might be feeling. So, a therapist writing a prescription for a client that they know would be used recreationally. Are you moving over?
I feel less good about that.
Yeah, then move, then like move, you know, follow your heart on the continuum. Okay, a therapist writing a referral for a client to get to rehab.
Instantly, voluntarily, or
that's a good. Yeah, exactly. Like there are certain things that are like context clues that like I might be leaving out that might really change your opinion, and that those context clues aren't necessarily always obvious when we meet those situations in the real world, right? So, yeah, I don't know, like, however, exactly, the fact that, like, you need that information to know how you feel about it, which is really interesting. That's sort of, like, what I said wasn't about the client, it was just about what the therapist is doing. So letting a doctor letting a patient inject drugs in their office. Yeah, I mean, basically, it's not to like criticize any individual's like, you know, position that they take for any situation that I named on the continuum, but really to get like all of us to think like a little more critically, not just about our decisions and our reactions to those situations, but like why we make those and like what are the things that are like influencing those. And that's why I said things like pay attention even to like
physical sensations, any imagery that comes up. So like, what are the things that help us or sort of condition the decisions that we make? And they're probably going to, for everyone, it's going to be a combination of, you know, like personal experience, experiences of others that you were exposed to or that you sort of like, that was, you were like around, especially like when you were growing up, when you were an adolescent, as an adult, as well as these like larger structural influences that really touch all of us, but even the ways that they affect us are going to be really dependent on things like our demographics around like race and class and gender, just as much as, again, just sort of like individual experiences, religion, like all of this stuff. Like, we're all influenced by the same things, but in very different ways.
I felt like media also like popping into my head, and even things when I like knew the risks, so the risks were my personal experience kind of shrunk that. And that's, we actually adapted this from a continuum of risk. If you guys have ever done that in like sex ed training, they do that. But we thought it was interesting how acceptability is really different from risk factors, and how we do this with providers, how when we sort of give advice, it's not really based on evidence-based practices, it's more about like what, how we feel about the situation. But does anyone want to share something that they found really, that they struggled with, or that they, I felt like I wanted to make up a new category I could stand in? Does anyone want to share?
I just felt like context was missing for like almost all of them. I was like, this is always going to be okay for some people, and like not okay for other people.
Yeah.
And like, an example that came to my mind when I thought that was like, people can like smoke whatever they want at a party. It's like, if it's like a bunch of people who are like trying to stay sober, it's like maybe not the best party for that. If it's a bunch of people who are going to smoke anyway, like not at a party, they better smoke it at the party. It's like much better.
Yeah, totally.
So it's like, okay, like Lana's saying, it's like the context is like never got someone. It's like, this is okay for some people and not okay for other people. It's like pretty much what I say.
Yeah, I know. I said that we like intentionally, that's part of it, is there are certain clues that are intentionally left out to sort of say, and then later say like, well, what if that person did exactly like what you said, which is like, well, does the patient want to go into rehab? So the idea of like autonomy of a patient, even if though they can't be like the final decision maker, is that's how, like, how often do we incorporate that into how we feel, if that is acceptable? Or how often is it just assumed that like, well, they don't have decision-making power because they shouldn't have decision-making power. So if their therapist says that they should...
Hi, did I come in?
No, I was just doing a workshop in the office with CSI.
The what?
So we had to do a workshop after you.
Oh, yeah, no problem.
With this one, because I wanted to be in the center for everything, but then including the me was really difficult because I wanted to look at everything objectively, but then I think it kind of dawned upon me that it's impossible to do that, and it's impossible to like not include my personal experiences and like what is it right for me. I kind of wanted like this is okay for me, and it might not be okay for everyone category, but
yeah, and I mean, yeah, we also generally, if we have like a bigger space, we have more options to just sort of like help illustrate, but that it's basically that there is, again, that there is a continuum and that there's no like one specific place that you can like really find your own. And that, so another question I have like for, okay, so for like any of the examples, whether it was, you know, I also noticed that like most of these were about sex and drugs, though some of them are also about power dynamics. But, okay, particularly for the one, I mean, even just like, so either about like smoking, eating meat, or having sex for money, just sort of like, if was there a point where you had the complete opposite feeling? And if so, like, and you don't even necessarily, if you want to like share, you can, or if you just want to like think about it, that's totally cool. But have there been any instances, that, like our opinions about things change, and like what influences us when we change our opinion about something? So like when I was younger, before I started smoking cigarettes, I thought it was the grossest thing in the world, and I was incredibly judgmental towards people who smoke them, and then I started smoking them myself, started receiving a lot of that judgment, and once I was on the other end of that judgment, then was I able to go back and evaluate my old behavior and realize that even though smoking has zero health benefits, immediate health benefits, that isn't necessarily the only thing that's influencing my opinion about people who do smoke. That I take a lot of times, especially with substances, we take health effects of that thing, that inanimate thing, and then we apply them to the person. And we make that person sort of stand for that thing.
Yeah, I go with, especially the smoking one, I wish I could, like, it's not good for me, but I do it anyway.
Right.
Or like, you know, I know it's not necessarily okay, but there's reasons why there's like a few things, like even sex for drugs, where it's like, you know, it's not a best practice, but there's like reasons why that situation is awesome sometimes. So, I don't know.
Do you guys have any other comments on it?
Yeah, I kind of struggle more with, like, people when I felt like someone's drug use is being enabled by other people or not knowing the context or, like, how long the person had been on drugs or, you know, were they totally strung out, like, not functional in their life and, you know, or if they were just functional, then that's fine. But if not, then I wouldn't want somebody helping them go further down, mm-hmm. you know, so I kind of got, like, a little bit, you know, like, I was more on that side, more on that part, but, yeah.
Well, so, oh, sorry, please.
I guess, like, we feel like a lot of the scenarios where there wasn't enough context, I just, like, assumed specific context that, like, made more sense to me or, like, that were, like, more needed in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, like, the idea of, like, oh, like, someone with, like, who's, like, addicted to drugs is, like, hustling anyway. And, like, if they can hustle in a way that is, like, going to get them drugs, like, more safely, that they should, and, like, wasn't necessarily, like, I guess, like, hadn't considered the idea, like, oh, like, it might make sense, like, get somebody addicted to drugs, or, like, have them be in a place where they, like, are more interested in being sober, and it, like, makes sense to support them in that decision. And, like, just, like, realizing that, like, filling in context, if I don't have enough context, and, like, that's not what's going to be the best idea
mm-hmm.
for people whose context is kind of similar to mine.
One of the sort of like biggest forces that informs sort of like personal and like societal attitudes about many behaviors, even those like beyond those having to do with trading sex and using criminalized substances, is criminalization. And the criminalization that we're talking about kind of goes beyond just this idea of certain things are outlawed. So we have a definition up here I'm gonna pull out in a second. But in general, actually, Reagan administration was not the first to, like, really
crackdown with laws around criminalization, but like that's one of the things that I always think of is that was a big turning point to the 80s Reagan administration.
I guess like cleaning up the neighborhood for like quality of life type of shit.
Safety.
Deviancy. Like it's a choice. Somebody made the decision. You know, a lot of times it's kind of portrayed as like it's inherent, we must do this, but someone made a decision at some point to get that ball rolling.
Morals, morality.
Think of like value systems. Upholds some sort of value system or other.
I think of like social death, like people who are like outcasts or.
Say social death?
Yeah.
So like, all right, so we have a lot of things that are, we have some things that are like very specific and are explicitly about laws, right? Laws and law enforcement. And it seems like those were a lot of the things that we kind of got started. I mean, state and punishment are like broader concepts, but they're also, those are things where we can probably think of like very specific examples, right? And then after we start talking about the more specific things that are like directly related to criminal justice system, right? It seems like we sort of got to like the structural and also like the human, you know, and sort of like states of being. So like I would say it's like surveillance is something that the state does, but it's also a way of like interacting with the world, especially if like you know that you're being surveilled, right? So how it's like affecting, these are sort of like specific things that are very structured, and then sort of larger things that are more like the experience of the criminalized, right? So, our, so like, yeah, which is basically works with our main definition right here. Now, oppression would be a state control of the body, some examples being incarceration, that gender is legal, you must have a legal gender, condoms as evidence, which you guys are not familiar with, means that in certain cities, not in Philadelphia, but in New York, New Orleans, D.C., if you have condoms on you, that can legally be used, just simply the evidence of condoms. I have condoms in every single bag. That can be used as evidence of prostitution. That being said, I'm not going to get arrested for that because I'm white and I'm cisgender. And for the most part, those laws have been used almost exclusively on trans women of color. But that doesn't say that the law, right? The law applies to everyone. It can potentially, no, it doesn't, right? Apply to everyone. The same thing that a needle is legal. It's legal to have a needle, right? But it also is controls like body and mind. So who has access to education? Not most kids in Philadelphia. You know, things like that. Like, you know, mental health care is not one. Even the definition of a disease. So like, what is a disease? What rights do you have? If you have that disease, what rights are taken away from you if you have that disease? So what happened when, you know, what does it mean that homosexuality is no longer a disease, is classified as a disease, but you can still have something called gender, gender identity disorder, yeah. So it used to be gender dysmorphia, something that was like much more sort of portrayed as much more deviant, and then because of the work of like activists, trans activists, and allies within the psychiatry community, it's been changed, but it's still in there. So like, what does that mean when they say that like you're crazy? But what does it mean for people who use drugs that it's being seen increasingly not as a straight up like moral failing, but that it's a disease, it's brain disease. So in some ways that means there is less incarceration, but is there any less state control, and are they completely ignoring social factors around trauma, for example, that might be contributing to why someone uses drugs? So this is gonna be like our working definition of criminalization, and also that it can be sort of reproduced. It's either explicit in laws, particularly the ones here, or either in the law itself, or just in how the law is practiced, because again, stop and frisk or constant evidence doesn't say anything about black people in the law, but like we all know that that's who it's affecting, because people of color, particularly black Latino men and black Latino trans women, for constant evidence. So it could be how the law is enforced. And it can also be these like, you know, social and cultural reproductions in the education system, in media, pop culture, in mental health, all of these things that like really reproduce this state and idea of criminalization. And that is very much, it's a socialization, it's a factor in like socialization. And it's something that affects everyone. Now there are targeted communities, obviously, there are communities that are targeted for state control, particularly for incarceration. But that doesn't mean that me as a white person who is not targeted for incarceration, even though I am a drug user and I am a sex worker, but I'm not really targeted because I work inside, again, I'm a white girl. But that being said, that doesn't mean that I'm not affected and I'm not affected by the factor of socialization of criminalization, which is a lot to say. But that it really, even if I'm not being incarcerated, it's still affecting things about like how I feel about certain behaviors, what I have access to. And again, like I do still trade sex, so like it's gonna affect me that way, right? But then it's really something that like we all kind of need to be aware of, and that's gonna be influencing every single person. It is a society-wide influence and factor in socialization. So that's why we kind of want to talk about it, because if you're not aware of that, then you're not going to be able to sort of like critique yourself and critique other aspects of society that are kind of like drawn away from the criminalization. So, does anybody have anything else you want to add to that definition?
Context.
Right, which is what we were missing from a lot of those examples.
Think of like social responsibility, sort of.
Yeah, what we're talking about is like how they're like pretty like intrinsically linked. And more, again, like this is just very much like they're kind of, we think of it as being the like a response into something sort of like main response, which we'll talk about in a second, so I stop talking.
I also think of like non, like amoral, like it doesn't have like a, it doesn't take a moral stance.
Whereas criminalization.
Yeah. Is the definition written in the
speech?
Okay.
No, I just didn't hear it. Yeah, so the definition that we use is it's a theory addressing behaviors which carry risk
in an environment of risk.
In an environment of risk.